This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
Broadcasting Company presents I Love Adventure. Incident number 10, The Kwong Moon Dagger, a new Carlton E. Morse production featuring Jack, Doc, and Reggie. It's late afternoon of a lazy day in the offices of the A1 Detective Agency just off Hollywood Boulevard. Doc Long is casting a rather disgruntled glance in the direction of Jack Packard, who is slumped back in his chair with his feet atop the badly scarred desk.
Jack, you realize ain't nothing been stirring for 3 whole days now?
Something will come along.
Well, man needs a little excitement once in a while.
Why not rent an alligator from one of the movie studios? You could wrestle with it.
Maybe you got yourself an idea, son. It might be... Uh-oh. Did you see what just walked in?
Five of them.
And all of them fair size, too.
Fair size, the man says. 8 to 5, they average 7 feet in height apiece.
Oh, well, please remain seated right where you are, gentlemen. Yes.
What's the pitch, friend?
We wish to search your office, Mr. Packard.
You are obliged by remaining quite still.
Yes.
No, pal, we haven't time. A previous engagement.
Yeah, with an alligator.
I regret, gentlemen, you will go nowhere.
If you think you hombres can come in here and start...
All right, take it easy, Doc.
Well...
The gun that just popped out of his sleeve says he can.
Woo. And all 5 of these Hong Kong sports seem to have.
So, gentlemen, with your permission, we will search the office.
The door to the right hides a wash basin. The one to the left leads into a closet. You'll find 2 broken golf clubs and 5 years accumulation of dust.
It is well, gentlemen. My men report there are no enemies concealed on the premises.
Well, you've no idea what a load that takes off our minds. Now what gives, friend?
You'll prepare yourselves to be honored by the presence of the Mighty One. Make obeisance, please. Though the flower of the 7 heavens, the ruler of the temple of Kwong Moon, Princess Mai Ling.
Well, smack me pink and call me baby.
Please pardon the air with which my servant, Qin Lu, guards person of his princess. For 100 generations, his family has watched over well-being of royal ones of Akaobang.
Well, that's a job I wouldn't mind undertaking myself.
Take it easy, darling.
I do not mind, Mr. Packard. A flattery of your friend, Mr. Long, quite pleasing. You are wondering why I have come here, eh?
Well, that don't matter. If you'd care to sit down over here next to me, Prince.
Suppose we let the princess have her say, Doctor.
You are right, Mr. Packard. My business here is of utmost urgency. I wish to engage your service to recover for me Kwong Moon Dagger.
Kwong Moon Dagger?
Oh, you have heard of it?
Not never. How about you, Jack?
This Kaobang is a small independent kingdom lying in the jungles between Cochin, China, and Yunnan. Kwong Moon is the god worship there. I'd say somebody made off with a dagger belonging in his temple.
You are exactly right, Mr. Packard. 2 months ago, a certain person visited our village. When he depart, dagger depart with him.
Well, why would he want an oriental pig's dagger?
Oh, blade of dagger of Kwong Moon is solid gold, Mr. Long. The hilt is encrusted with a most perfect of emeralds. rubies and diamonds.
Well, ain't no wonder you folks are doing a slow burn.
More important is the fact that my people fear that Kuang Moon angry with them. Our crops have been blighted. Disease and famine threaten entire nation.
This will all be corrected the minute the dagger is back in the temple, of course.
So my people believe. That is why I follow man responsible to United States. But this country is really unfamiliar to me and my bodyguard, Qin Lu. We need assistance of men we can trust. Who knows its customs and habits?
Well, you come to the right spot, Prince. Is that right, Jack?
Well, you will be rewarded, of course. Upon the hilt of dagger is Kuang Moon Ruby, a most perfect gem of its kind in all world. You return dagger to me, and the ruby is yours.
What's the name of the character who took the dagger?
He was known to us as Paul Cavagnari.
And you've traced him to the United States?
Oh, yes. Even more definite than that. To Chicago.
Oh, Windy City, huh? Any address there?
We found the envelope among his effects. It was addressed to him on a street known as Wentworth. Here is address.
Well, that should help. Anything else?
Only one little thing. Dagger was seen yesterday by one of our countrymen in Chicago.
Well, now you really bring us up to date. Where was it at?
Falling from small bridge into Lincoln Park. Lagoon.
Falling into the lagoon? How come? Was it thrown in?
Oh, no, Mr. Packard. He was buried between shoulders of Paul Cavagnari.
Some looker at Princess, huh, Jack? And that perfume she wore, oh, it does things to a feller.
Yeah, maybe that's why we're in something a little deeper than we figured, Doc.
What's that supposed to mean?
A report from Chicago said that somebody slipped Paul Cavagnari a Diger Mickey and dumped his body into the Lincoln Park Lagoon.
Sure, but the police closed in before her buddies could recover it. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. Only while you were getting our plane tickets, I called Chicago Homicide. No corpse by the name of Cavagnari has turned up, and nobody reported a stabbing in Lincoln Park.
Well, Jack, if there's such a strong suspicion of double cross about this case, why we're taking it on?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe curiosity. Maybe to keep you from having to wrestle alligators. Or maybe that perfume got me, too.
You know something, Jack? Darn colorful street, this Wentworth Avenue.
Yeah. Tourist eye view of Chicago's Chinatown.
What you reckon that Cavagnari hombre was doing in this part of town?
Well, we'll know pretty quick. Here's the address now.
Yeah, gents?
Here, keep the change.
Thanks, pal.
Uh-oh. Jack, this can't be the right place.
It's the address the princess gave it.
But take a gander at that neon sign. Blue Celestial Mortuary. It's a high-class burying parlor. That Cavagnari feller can't have lived there.
Only one way to find out. Let's go in.
Little depressing, ain't it?
What'd you expect, dancing girls?
No, but they'd help.
Good evening, gentlemen. Is there some service we of the Blue Celestial Mortuary may perform for you?
Well, we hope so. We're looking for a Mr. Paul Cavagnari.
Mr. Cavagnari. Of course, gentlemen. This way, gentlemen.
And he does hang out here. Now, if we can get him to crack about that dagger...
Don't worry about that when we meet him.
Here you are, gentlemen. Mr. Cavagnari.
Thanks.
Hey.
If I do say so myself, the Blue Celestial Mortuary has done a magnificent job. One would swear he was still alive.
Wouldn't they, though?
Oh, poor Paul. Last place I wanted to see him was in a coffin.
Yes, a sad case. Very sad. Cut down in the bloom of manhood.
Well, accidents can happen to anybody.
Accident?
Well, of course, accident. You don't think Paul just deliberately jumped off that bridge in the lagoon, do you?
Bridge? Lagoon? Someone must have misinformed you, sir. Mr. Cavagnari died of natural causes. A heart attack.
You sure of that?
Certainly. We have a copy of the death certificate.
You remember who signed it?
Why, a Dr. Jansen or Jenkins, something like that.
Well, would you mind getting it for us? It would relieve our minds so much to see it. You know how kinfolk is.
Why, I'd be happy to, sir. It will only take a moment. I'll be right back.
How about that?
The whole darn thing don't make no sense, son. You don't reckon somebody's pulling our leg, do you?
I'll buy that, but who and why?
And you've got me. Did Cavalieri get dunked into the lagoon or not? And what about that Quang Moon dagger in the back business?
Well, that's one thing we can settle right now.
But, Jack, the death certificate, you heard him.
Nobody can forge a stab wound, Doc.
Oh, you mean have a look for ourselves?
What else?
Well, it's darn distasteful, but it's got to be done, I'm your boy.
Then let's go to it. Our mortician friend will be back any minute.
Jack, that was a 45.
Come on, run.
Yep. Which way?
There's the office, the end of the corridor.
Somebody's starting to play kind of rough around here.
Yeah. Yeah, he's dead, all right.
But who done it? Don't look like there's nobody around.
The open window explains that. Come on, let's get back to the chapel. I want to talk to that organist.
Think he might be in on to know about all this?
I don't know, but he's the only one left still alive around here. There's the chapel. We'll hit the organ loft first, and... Uh-oh.
Yeah, we kind of late. Our little bird seems to have flowed his musical coup.
It's not the only one. Take a look at the coffin.
At the Jack, a corpse is gone.
Yeah, our pal Carbonari won't stay put, apparently. There it is, Doc. The Hung Shu Mu, the Red Tree Flower Shop.
But I don't see what we're doing going to a flower shop, son.
Somebody sent a carload of flowers to Cobbmyar from this place. If we can learn who it was, we may have a lead on what to do next. Come on, let's go in.
Good evening, gentlemen. Is there something I could do for you?
Yeah, it could be. You delivered a load of flowers to the Blue Celestial Mortuary recently, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. Did you wish to order some similar ones?
Well, that depends on how cooperative you can be.
We pride ourselves on our service, sir. I'm sure we can supply you with whatever you wish.
Mm-hmm. Well, then try this for size. Who sent those other flowers?
I'm sorry, sir. I am not at liberty to say.
Now look, Hangtown Fry, you ain't no doctor and a lawyer. Ain't no professional secrets in your business.
If a client of yours wished to remain anonymous, would you disclose the identity, Miss Along?
Uh-oh. Hey, Jack, my fame must be spreading. Doggone, Fu Manchu, how'd you know my name?
I was told to expect your arrival.
Who is your interested informer?
And if you say Paul Cavalieri, I ain't gonna believe it.
No, it was the person whose identity you seek.
Hey, what'll it take to make you come across as something besides double talk?
Nothing, Mr. Packard. And the message was left for you at the same time.
Okay, let's have it.
The northwest corner of Wentworth and Fowler.
Come again, sport.
The northwest corner of Wentworth and Fowler.
What's that supposed to mean?
I'm afraid I do not know. However, the corner is only a few yards from the shop. Why not investigate and see?
Jack, this kid may be making sense of that.
Maybe. Come on, Doc. Thanks for your trouble.
Do not mention it, Mr. Pocket. We like to build up goodwill for future business.
Oh, man.
And do not forget, gentlemen, we specialize in funerals. Good night.
That hombre gives a good deal more than he takes.
I mean, he knows a good deal more than he says.
Well, that seems to be a fact about everybody in this case, with the exception of us.
Well, there's the sign. Wentworth and Fowler, and this is the northwest corner. Now what?
Well, don't seem to be nothing interesting here. Just a vacant lot with some signboards around it.
That message meant something. Hey, Doc, that car.
Jack, that fellow leaning out the window. He's got...
Down, Doc, get out.
Hey, Doc. Doc, you all right?
What you mean, am I all right? I landed on my doggone crazy bone and spoiled my aim. Must have missed them gunmen of mine.
Yeah, I didn't do so well myself. Well, we know what that message meant now.
Yeah, some message. Hey, did you get a look at that polecat that was shooting that Tommy gun?
Yeah.
Something mighty familiar about him, wasn't it?
It should be. He was Princess Mai Ling's bodyguard, Chin Lu. Back to the flower shop, quick.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Flower man don't seem to be around.
Maybe in that back room. Let's hit it. Well,
come on. I'm right eager to exchange a few words with that son of Satan, punctuated with a right cross or two.
Well, leave him enough lit to talk about that message, Doc.
Yeah. Well, don't seem to be in here neither. Now, where are you supposed to...
Hey, hold it now. The door to the refrigerator room's open. Somebody's in there.
Refrigerator room? Oh, for the flowers. Hey, hold it, fella. I can see a shadow in the looking glass.
He hasn't heard us yet. Must be almost soundproof in there.
Well, why deprive him of our company?
That's just what I was thinking. Come on.
Yeah. Yank that door open and surprise him, son. He got it coming at the little party we just had.
Check. Okay, here we go. All right, pal. How about...
Look out, Doc. Catch him.
Yeah. Oh, too late.
How about that?
So it wasn't the florist leaning against that door. It was our missing pal, Paul Cavaliere.
Yeah.
Now, what was he doing in here, you reckon?
Take a look at his clothes.
Why, they half tore off of him.
Which means that whoever hijacked him from the mortuary put him in here to give him a good frisking. And incidentally, he wasn't killed by the Quang Moon dagger.
Yeah, so I see him. Punctures in his chest. Looks like he's made by a .38 caliber. What'd you pick up there, son?
Ticket or something. Punched by a timestamp. Here, take a look.
Boat concession, Lincoln Park Lagoon, time out 5:17, time in 5:29. What in thunder do you suppose that means?
Looks like he took a rowboat ride on the lagoon sometime before he died.
Couldn't have liked it very much. He was only out 12 minutes.
Hey, Doc, I got a hunch. Let's get out of here.
No,
and...
not bother to turn around, Mr. Parker.
Well, so Carbonieri had company in the refrigerator room.
You've been crouched down among them flowers all the time?
Keep facing the wall and do not offer any resistance as my men disarm and bind you. Those are gun barrels you feel pressing against your spines.
Well, I'll take your word for it, but is there any particular reason for the pistol massage? And who are you?
I am Dr. Jen King.
How about that? I knew there was someone else we should have checked on.
You will have your chance now. You and I are going to have a talk. A long overdue talk. About Paul Cavaliere and the Quang Moon dagger. I trust you are quite comfortable here in my quarters, Mr. Packard.
I'll do. Where's Doc?
He is being held in the next room. But do not be concerned. No harm will come to either of you as long as cooperation is the keynote of this little meeting.
Okay, cooperation it is. You begin. What's your business with us?
I am Dr. Jen Kin, Mr. Packard. Head of a large hospital in Hanoi, French Indochina.
Haven't you got your professions mixed up a little? That was a gun I saw in your hand, not a scalpel.
There are times, Mr. Packard, when it is necessary for a man of medicine to take up arms in defense of his profession.
That pitch was a little wide, Doctor. Come again.
Very well. 2 months ago, my hospital was robbed of over $1 million worth of radium. I suspected a man I had known casually in Hanoi by the name of Paul Cavaliere.
Seems to me I've heard this somewhere before. You trailed him to the States, learned he was in Chicago.
Yes, Mr. Packard. But I could not locate him here. I was about to give up the search 2 days ago when I received a phone call from him.
Uh-huh. 8 to 5, he was giving you a chance to buy your radium back.
Precisely. At a price considerably lower than I would have to pay to replace it on the open market. However, he also mentioned the possibility of my having to buy the Quang Moon dagger. I agreed to discuss the proposition with him and went to meet him. The place he had chosen was most unusual one.
I can take the ball from here, Doctor. The place was the Lincoln Park Lagoon.
Yes.
Cavaliere was dead when you got there.
That is correct.
And there was no radium.
There was no radium.
And so you had him picked up by the Blue Celestial Mortuary, signed a fake death certificate, and left him lying in state to see who might show up.
I still had hopes of recovering that radium, Mr. Packard. And it occurred to me that if the people who had killed him for it found no mention of his murder in the paper, they might wonder why. Might be driven by guilt and fear to learn What had happened to him?
Pretty long shot, Doctor.
It paid off, Mr. Packard. You and Mr. Long visited the mortuary.
Yeah. Who was your stool pigeon there, the organist?
Oh, that is quite correct. Unfortunately, he ran out to try to intercept the mortician's murderer and did not see you remove the body. However, he did trail you to the florist shop, where he learned your identity and got in touch with me by telephone. So, and now, Mr. Packard, it is your turn to cooperate.
Okay, I'll get your radium for you.
As I thought. You do have it.
Nope, but neither do the lads who bumped off Cavagnari.
How do you know that?
Because he didn't it. That's why they came back to snatch his body. They hadn't been able to find the stuff and were looking for something to tip them off as to where it was.
And do you know where it is, Mr. Packard?
No, but I can find it and get the Quang Moon dagger for myself if you release us right away. If not, it'll be too late. It's your last chance, Doctor.
You are presuming rather heavily upon my gullibility, are you not?
I'm presuming you're a doctor, that you realize what that radium means to your patients.
Yes. Yes, there are thousands of my countrymen now doomed to die, who will live if I bring it back to Hanoi with me. Very well, Mr. Packard. You shall be released at once.
But, Jack, you believe this Jin Kin filler story?
Makes sense, Doc.
Well, I sure am happy to know that, son. I wouldn't ever guess.
You won't have to guess much longer.
You mean there's some action coming up?
Well, there should be a little excitement.
Well, where and when?
In about 10 minutes, near the boathouse, on the Lincoln Park Lagoon. Take the rowboat on the end, Doc.
You mean we're going rowing at this time of night?
Why not? Cavagnari went somewhere. It took him 12 minutes to get there and back.
But where could a feller go in this overgrown wading pool? And that... Oh, that little wooded island at the upper end. Is that spot you mean?
I don't know, Doc, but we're going to row over there and find out.
Look, Jack... If this is the action you promised me, let's take a crack at guessing again.
Don't give up the ship. We're almost there.
Yeah.
And I got a hunch you'll have enough action in the next few minutes to... See what I mean?
Hey, over the side, Doc. Quick.
Jack, water's awful darn cold for my Saturday night tub.
Well, he's trying to make it hot enough for us.
Well, the boat's a pretty good shield. Shall we kind of ease it islandward, maybe, huh?
Yeah, that's a general idea. Yeah. Let's go. We're nearly there. When we touch bottom, make a dash for it.
Yeah.
Hit the deck at the first cover we come to.
You bet you. Shades of Omaha Beach on D-Day.
Okay, Doc, let's go.
You still okay, son?
No complaints. What about you?
These here bramble thickets ain't my idea of a feather bed. Otherwise, I'm just fine.
Good.
Wonder what's happened to our bloodthirsty gun.
Probably got a spot moving in for the kill.
Let's make that our happy thought for the day. Ought to be some way to upset his plan. You got any ideas?
Yeah. Last time he fired was from behind that elm tree. I'm going to shove off for it.
But he ain't there now. If he's moving in on us, he... Oh, I get it. You'll draw as far so I can shoot at the muzzle flash.
Right. Keep your eyes open.
Just leave it to your Uncle Dudley. Good luck, son.
And there I go.
Jack. Hello, Jack, can you hear me? Jack, are you all right, fella?
Okay, Doc, come on, everything's under control.
Well, say so then. How'd I make out with a firecracker, King?
You'll have a pretty sore shoulder for a very long time.
Well, it's our old friend Chen Lu, so he was the one sniping at us.
Yeah, if you take a gander on the ground behind this tree, you'll see why.
Well, look at that. They're on the ground beside that hole.
Yeah,
it?
Quang Moon dagger, right where Paul Cavagnari had hidden it.
You mean our job is done?
As soon as we get Chin Lo to a hospital and fly back to L.A. Take a deep breath, Doc. The next one you take may be filled with Princess Mai Ling's perfume.
So, Mr. Packard, my own servant, Chin Lu, tried to obtain Quang Moon dagger behind my back?
That's the way it looks, all right.
Yeah, don't take it so hard, Princess. After all, we did bring the dagger back to Los Angeles with her.
You have done really much to make my people happy again. I do not know how to tell you how grateful I am. You have dagger?
Yeah, here in this drawer. You know, Princess, this dagger is not only ornamental, it's a pretty good weapon. Sharp point, keen steel blade. Yeah, I'm a little surprised. I thought you said the blade was solid gold.
I did, Mr. Packard, but I had not seen dagger in recent years. My memory played tricks on me.
Played tricks about the gems on the hilt, too.
Oh, I had not forgotten your fee, Mr. Packard. The giant ruby will be yours?
Don't bother. There's not much of a market for paste these days.
Paste?
She acts surprised, yeah?
But I am surprised. I had no idea.
I suppose you didn't know that the hilt was hollow and that Paul Cavagnari smuggled the stolen radium into this country inside it.
Stolen radium? What are you talking about, Mr. Packard?
Come off it, Princess. You, Cavagnari, and Chin Lu were in on that robbery together. Only Cavagnari tried to slip you the double cross and sell the stuff on the hot market in Chicago.
What is this fantastic story?
When you heard the Red Hots, you tried to sell it to, double-crossed him and bumped him off, you came to us, hoping we'd find out where he'd hidden the stuff.
But your number one boy, Chin Lu, got to Chicago ahead of us and hijacked Cavagnari's body to search it for clues that might have been missed. When he found that boat ride ticket and figured out what it meant, well, me and Jack was superfluous property.
That's why you baited that trap at the florist and tried to bump us off. After that, you came back to L.A. while Chin Lu tore out to the lagoon to pick up the loot. That's why
you... Okay, you dirty double-crossing shame.
Look out, Jack.
You won't let the pin is on...
Let's have that sticker, baby.
I'll kill you. Packard, I'll kill you.
Drop it, baby. Drop it. That's better. Doc, open the door.
With pleasure.
And now, Princess, you can make your exit.
Well, here's your stinking hide for this. You won't get away with it, you rat. You won't.
Wow.
Yeah, my sentiments, exactly. What a hellcat to lovely damsel turn out to be.
Yeah. Stolen goods detail outside and take care of her. Well, Quang Moon dagger. Just as false a piece of guilt as Princess Mai Ling's soul.
But what kills my soul is that the beautiful ruby on the hilt is false, too. All that brain work and gun shooting and no payoff.
Oh, I don't know. The hospital in Indochina will get its radium back as fast as Dr. Jen Kin can get it there. And when you think of some thousands of people who'll get another crack at life now...
Yeah, maybe you got something, my son. Oh, well, mark down another two-fisted experience in the tarred old files of the A1. By the way, let me have that telephone, will you, son?
Huh? Oh, sure. Yeah.
Thanks.
Who are you calling now?
RKM Studios, about an alligator.
Hey, wait a minute. You're not taking that gag seriously.
Why, of course I am. After the Princess Mai Ling ought to be able to throw one of them amphibious critters 2 out of 3 falls with a Quang Moon dagger tied behind my back.
Just heard I Love Adventure, a new Carlton E. Morse production featuring Michael Raffetto as Jack Packard and Barton Yarborough as Doc Long. Next week, incident number 11 entitled Assignment with a Displaced Person, an affair of a girl and a black market operator. Other players in tonight's show include Lillian Baya, Lou Krugman, Russell Thorson, and Harry Lang. The Quang Moon Dagger was written by Sidney Marshall. Organ music by Rex Corey. Your announcer, Jim Butters. a listening reminder. For a laugh-provoking detective drama, stay tuned next for Johnny Fletcher, starring popular radio personality Bill Goodwin. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not. The first official act of King Henry VI was to approve a decree stating he could be spanked by his royal nurse. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about a patriot who lived in exile. He taught music for years in Buffalo, New York, in the late 1800s and early in the 20th century. But his heart and his talent were really in Mexico. He was Jaime Nuño, who was forced to leave Mexico in 1854 and spend the remainder of his life unknown to his countrymen. A particularly cruel fate, since Nuño was the composer of the Mexican national anthem. Believe it or not.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 39. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the director of Radio City Playhouse, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Bob. Friends, before we begin our show, Radio City Playhouse, on behalf of NBC and station WFAA Dallas, extends hearty congratulations to the Dallas Morning News on the formal dedication of its new building and its 108th birthday. Good luck and continued success to the Dallas Morning News. And now a word about Mr. Bill Lipton, our star on tonight's show. Although he is only 22, he has had 12 years' experience in radio. On the Playhouse, he has appeared in such varied roles as a French porter, a drunken husband, and on our Christmas broadcast as one of the three wise men. He is one of the most versatile actors we know, and in spite of taking 3 years out to serve in the Navy, he will receive his master's degree from Columbia University in June. All this, from a young man of 22, compels our respect and admiration. Here is Bill Lipton playing Frank Jackson in Murder is a Matter of Opinion, Attraction 39, on Radio City Playhouse.
I'm telling you this story from prison. I have 11 more days before they electrocute me for murdering my brother. I didn't kill him. As God is my solemn judge, I did not kill my brother. I'll tell you everything I know, and perhaps you can figure out why I'm here. I can't. I can't believe it. I've been over and over and over the story. Every word of it is true, and nobody believes me. Nobody. I'm 22. I was going to be a lawyer. My dad thought I was just about the... Well, he was pretty proud. Now even Dad thinks I'm guilty. Even Dad. And I'm not. I'd like you to understand me. I was the... Well, I talked fast and too much, and I guess maybe I was a smart aleck. Well, that's not so terrible, is it? I'm only 22, and... Well, I'm not a smart aleck anymore, if that's any consolation, anybody. Brian, my brother, was quieter. He was a year younger than I, and he didn't talk nearly as much or as fast or as often. That's why he never won an argument with me in his life. And believe me, we had plenty. But they weren't fights. They were, well, two brothers. We razzed each other, but it was all fun. Underneath, we were brothers. In our first year of law school, we were real eager and talked pretty big about legal points. But Brian never won an argument. Never.
So you're wrong. It says so right here.
Where?
All bills for raising revenue originate in the House of Representatives. Can't you read?
Well, I thought they could originate in either house if it was just a question of...
Well, you're wrong, so pay up.
I still don't think that...
Look, Brian, who's right? You or the Encyclopedia of Federal Law?
Well, I guess...
You owe me half a buck. Come on, cough up.
Well, okay, I guess...
Look, you admit you're wrong, don't you?
Yes, I admit it.
Okay, give me 50 cents. Trent University Law School has pretty high standards. If you want to stay, you better smarten up.
In our second year, we began to disagree violently about capital punishment and murder. Brian was obsessed with the idea that all kinds of innocent people had been executed for murders they didn't commit. Every time he read about some killing in the paper, he'd try to prove to me that the condemned person wasn't guilty at all. The night he got his big idea, we were sitting on a bench way down at one end of the campus. There was nobody around. It was about 10 o'clock. And Brian was very excited.
Frank, I still say that the man in the Jensen case could have been innocent. I don't believe that a man who only weighs 130 pounds could have shoved a man the size of Jensen out of a hotel window.
Well, he carried out the sentence, so it doesn't matter what you say.
How do you think you'd feel if you'd been in his shoes?
Cold, stiff, and dead.
Do you mean to sit there and say that you don't think it ever happens? There's never been a case of an innocent man convicted of a murder he didn't commit?
It isn't a question of what I think. You've made the statement that it's possible for an innocent man to be hanged or electrocuted. I say prove it.
All right. All right, I will. I can, you know. If you'll help me, I'll prove it.
How?
Let's stage a fake murder.
What are you talking about?
A mock murder case. Look, I'll play the corpse and you play the killer. We'll stage a killing, a fake killing. I'll let a dozen witnesses actually see you shoot me in cold blood, and then afterwards I'll undertake your defense and prove that you're innocent.
If I'd only said no. If I'd only admitted that perhaps it was possible for an innocent man to be hanged or electrocuted. Why couldn't I have agreed with him? Why couldn't I let him have his say, and if I disagreed with him, kept my opinion to myself? I don't know. Actually, his suggestion wasn't as strange as it sounds. Each year, the moot court of the law school secretly planned and enacted some sort of crime. The crime was committed on the campus, and no one knew about it except the chairman of the moot court, the victim, and the criminal. The idea was to catch the students by surprise and give them realistic experience in criminal procedure. Brian and I decided we'd stage our own mock crime. Well, that's all it ever was. It was a gag right from start to finish. I don't know where the slip-up was. I don't know who it was that hated Brian so much that... Well, I just don't know where it went wrong. We worked it out very carefully. Brian drew up a week's schedule. We even made a bet of $50, 2 months' allowance. He was convinced he could win, and even I began to get interested. We had to be sure that nobody had the slightest suspicion it was all a planned affair, so we made the bench down at the end of the campus our private conference room. We met there every night before going to bed. And at last, we got all the details worked out.
Well, we're just about ready, Frank. I've written down what you're supposed to do. Memorize it and then burn it. We'll commit the murder next Monday. That gives us a whole week.
All right, next Monday.
First, we've got to establish a motive. You've got to make everybody on the campus think that you hate me like poison.
A week isn't very long.
Well, it's long enough. We'll pull the watch gag in the cafeteria tomorrow. Oh, can you suggest to Tom Benson that he have lunch with you?
Well, sure, I guess so.
Well, ask him tonight. You be in the cafeteria at 12:30. I'll come in about 12:45. I'll be sure that somebody sees me put my watch on the bed tomorrow, and you steal it right after breakfast. Okay.
Right after breakfast.
You know your lines?
We rehearsed them often enough.
You sure you don't mind the sock and the jaw part?
Oh, just don't get too enthusiastic, that's all.
Well, it's difficult to fake if I don't hit you reasonably hard.
I guess I can stand it for once. You hit me on the word contemptible.
Yeah, that's right.
I tell you, Brian, you've lost your $50 right now.
Want to make it $100?
4 months' allowance, are you crazy?
I'm going to win this bet, Frank. You wait and see. Well, come on, it's getting late. You go back first. I'll see you in the cafeteria tomorrow at 12:45.
What's the matter with you, Frank? You've hardly said a word all through lunch.
It's Brian, Tom.
Is something the matter?
I've just discovered that my kid brother's a heel. He's also a liar.
Oh, now look, Frank, that's no way to talk about Brian.
He's a cheap, sneaky little punk, and he makes me sick.
He's just come in, Frank.
It's a public cafeteria.
Well, I suppose you've got your reasons, but it doesn't seem like a very nice way for two brothers to act.
Tom, I could tell you stories about that kid that would make your hair curl.
Drop it. He's coming over here.
Oh, why can't he eat by himself? He knows how I feel. He's always trying to force in on people.
Hey, oh, Frank, here he comes.
Frank, I'd like a couple of words with you.
Oh, look, fellas, I gotta get
going. Sit still, Tom. Finish your coffee. I'd like you to get a load of what my father expects Trent to make into a lawyer.
Where's my watch, Frank?
What are you talking about?
My watch. I left it on the bed this morning while I went to shower. It's gone.
So what?
I want it back.
I haven't got it.
I saw you come out of the dormitory on my way back from showers. We're the only men in the dorm who don't have a 9 o'clock lecture this morning. When I went back into the dorm, there was nobody else there and the watch was gone. Now I want it back.
Are you accusing me of stealing your watch?
Yes, and I want it back.
Well, look, boys, I don't think this is...
Don't go, Tom. Just get a load of Junior here. So I'm a thief, am I?
Frank, I want my watch back.
Oh, drop dead, you dumb little jerk. If you weren't so scrawny, I'd knock your face in.
You stole my watch.
Now, look, Frank. Brian, don't be crazy.
Shut up, Tom. Where's the watch, Frank? Are you going to give it to me quietly, or do I have to take it?
Look, kid, you're stinking up the cafeteria. Huzz off. Go on, creep.
My own brother, a dirty, cheap, contemptible...
Pretty convincing. Brian knocked me down. Dishes were broken. Everybody in the cafeteria stood rooted to the spot. In an hour, it was all over the campus. Everybody knew that the Jackson brothers were fighting. Everybody believed it. Neither Brian nor I made a single slip. The next night, we had a row in the dormitory. On Wednesday, I threw a milkshake at Brian in the milk bar. Thursday, we got hauled up before the dean and told that if we couldn't behave like gentlemen, we'd better leave. Friday, we had a row at basketball practice. Saturday night at the third year prom, we had a fist fight in the middle of the floor over Brian's girl. Elaine cried and went home alone. Oh, it was a buildup. A real grade-A buildup. And all of it was planned. All of it. I can't understand why people won't believe it was a gag. Well, anyway, on a Sunday night preceding the murder, we had a last conference on our bench. It was a perfect setup. Perfect.
Oh, it's perfect, Frank. Perfect. Tomorrow we'll pull the murder. I picked up a gun today. Here.
Good night, Brian. Where'd you get that thing?
I stole it from the sports office. It won't be needed until track practice on Wednesday. Don't worry, I'll put it back. It's loaded with blanks.
Are you sure you can put it back without being caught?
Sure. Now, is everything set for tomorrow?
You'll be in the bookstore at 12:15, right?
Right. In the history section near the door.
I'll come in about 1:00. I'll yell out your name. You turn around and I fire twice.
That's right. Incidentally, I'm filling a little paper cup with ketchup and putting it in my shirt pocket. When you fire... I'll clutch my hands to my chest, squeeze the ketchup, and fall.
It'll mess up a perfectly good shirt.
Oh, it'll wash out. I'll play dead for 10 minutes and just lie there. And then you rush back to the dorm and wait for me. Then we'll have lunch and go over together and report the crime to the dean.
Okay.
Now, one last check. You're sure you haven't given this away to anybody?
Oh, positive.
And that slip of paper that I wrote out instructions on?
Burn it. You think I'm crazy? If you could produce that paper, you could prove all this was a gag.
Well, I guess we've thought of everything.
I bet you're going to pull some phony self-defense gag.
No?
An insanity plea?
Nope. You'll shoot me in the bookstore tomorrow. It'll be straight, deliberate, premeditated killing. And I'll get you off.
It's a terrific stunt if you can do it. How much is this dictionary, miss?
$4.85.
Okay, I'll take it. Can I charge it, please?
Oh, certainly. What is the name, please?
Jackson. Brian Jackson.
Brian
Jackson. Brian!
But Frank! Frank, what's the matter?
I told you I wouldn't take any more, didn't I? Well, I meant it.
Frank! Frank, put down that gun!
I've taken all I'm going to take. This is where you get it!
Then everything exploded in my brain. Right up until I fired the shots, I'd been enjoying myself. But there was something about the way Brian clutched at his stomach instead of his chest. He fell. And there was blood on his lips. Real blood. Brian's blood. From there on, everything was a nightmare. Brian was dead before they could get him to the hospital. I'm not quite clear on what happened after that because I was stunned. My own brother. Brian. My brother. In some fantastic, unimaginable way, I shot him. They phoned the police, of course, and I managed to get a few words with the dean before they came to pick me up.
Frank, I don't think you'd better tell me all this. The police are the ones...
Dean Harrison, you've got to believe me. You've got to. We planned the whole thing. Brian had always believed that the... Well, you see, we... Look, Dean Harrison, I can't talk right, but...
Frank,
but,
there's no use.
But this was a stunt. A mock murder. Brian and I planned it ourselves. The fights, the buildup was all a stunt. Brian believed that I could kill him. I mean, appear to kill him. And that he could defend me and... Oh, Dean, those bullets were blanks. I mean, they... Brian got the gun himself from the sports office. They were supposed to be blank cartridges.
Frank, you'd better not talk anymore. I don't know what to say. I've been at Trent for 12 years. There's never been a tragedy like this. I'm very upset. I've always liked you, Frank, but this is out of
but
my
Dean
hands.
But, Dean Harrison, surely you don't think that I really...
I telephoned your father. He's taking a plane from New York tonight. I'm afraid from here on it's up to the police. They'll be here any minute.
I can't recall what happened in the next 2 days. My father arrived. I was booked. They put me in a cell. Dad was rushing around about bail and trying to get Peter Cheney to come from New York to defend me. Dad looked haggard and older than I'd ever seen him look. He came every afternoon to see me.
There you are, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you, God.
Hello, Dad.
Hello, Frank.
Half an hour, Mr. Jackson. That's all you can have.
Right. All right.
Is it over?
Yes.
Was it a nice funeral?
Frankie. Oh, Frankie. Frankie.
Did you get Peter Cheney?
Yes. Yes, I talked to him on the telephone for an hour this morning. He said he'd take the case.
What else did he say?
He says that we've got to find out who switched those bullets.
But I tell you, I don't know.
Frank, think hard. Did Brian have any enemies? Was there anybody on the campus that... How did Elaine feel about him?
I don't know. She certainly wouldn't want to kill him.
Cheney says if we can't find out who changed the bullets, we'd better plead temporary insanity.
I won't. I won't plead insanity.
Frank, you may have to.
But I didn't kill him, Dad. I won't plead insanity.
But Frank, it's such damning evidence. No jury on earth will believe your story. No jury on earth.
I
When I finally came up for trial, my father was a broken man. One son killed, the other convicted of his murder. After the trial started, I'd lie on my bed at night and go over the whole thing word by word. Then I'd stop. And I'd pray. I'd say the Lord's Prayer over and over. But my praying didn't seem to make much difference. Witness after witness testified to how Frank and I hated each other. The watch, the fight at the dance. One after the other, until I almost began to believe that maybe I had killed him.
French University.
Yes, sir.
You're acquainted with the deceased?
Yes, sir.
Now, will you tell the jury in your own words what happened on the Friday preceding the murder at the dance which you attended with the deceased?
Well, we were dancing and Frank cut in. Brian made some objection and Frank struck him. Then Brian struck back and Frank swore at him.
What were the exact words that the defendant used?
He said, "Damn you, I'll get you for this."
Thank you. That's all. Your witness?
No questions.
Now, Mr. Benson, will you tell the court in your own words what happened in the cafeteria on the afternoon of April 5th?
Well, Frank was sitting with me, and Brian came in, and Frank made some crack, and one thing led to another.
Mr. Benson, what did the defendant say?
Something about, look at what my father expects Trent to make into a lawyer.
He was addressing the deceased?
Yes, sir.
Go on.
Well, Brian accused Frank of stealing his watch. Frank denied it, and then Brian hit him.
You saw the blow struck?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Now, I understand that you were in the bookstore and witnessed the killing.
Yes, sir.
After the defendant fired the shots, what did you do?
For a moment, I was so stunned I just stood there. Then I ran after Frank and followed him up to the men's dormitory.
What happened when you reached the dormitory?
I said something about how could he have done such a thing. I don't remember my exact words.
What did the defendant say? Do you remember his exact words?
Yes, sir.
If you can't remember yours, how can you remember his?
Because it was such a terrible thing to say.
Will you repeat what the defendant said, please?
He said, I killed the little stinker because he had it coming to him.
Thank you. Your witness?
No questions.
Mr. Jackson. Am I to understand that the entire series of quarrels which you had with your brother before the murder occurred were intended as a stunt?
Yes.
Was the murder a stunt, too?
Yes. No, it wasn't a murder. The bullets were blank, I tell you. Why do you keep questioning me like this?
Mr. Jackson, it is not my idea that you take the stand. I will thank you to answer questions as they are put.
I'm sorry.
Have you no explanation of why there were real bullets in the gun?
No.
After your brother gave you the gun, did anyone else have access to it?
Well, I don't know. Somebody must have.
Did it leave your possession?
I don't know. I left it under my pillow all day Monday.
Did you tell anybody this?
No.
If the gun was loaded with blank cartridges, where are they?
I don't know.
If nobody else knew about the gun, if nobody knew it was under your pillow, who could have switched the bullets?
I don't know.
There are a great many things that you don't know, Mr. Jackson.
I only know I didn't kill him. I didn't kill him, I tell you!
The truth is, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that Frank Jackson is lying. He is lying desperately in an effort to escape the consequences of his loathsome fratricide. Even if the motive of the murder had not been clearly established, even if 12 witnesses had not seen him shoot down his brother in cold blood as they testified, Frank Jackson would still stand condemned by the hopeless confusion of his own testimony. Why did he invent the fantastic story he asks you to believe? Because it serves one good purpose. It supplies him with an excuse for his inability to call one single witness in his defense. The only other man who knew about the alleged hoax is dead. That is what automatically proves that no one else but Frank Jackson could have loaded real bullets in the murder gun. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I imagine it's unnecessary for you to leave the box to render the only possible verdict. Guilty of murder in the first degree.
Have you reached a verdict?
Yes,
Your Honor. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree as charged.
We appealed, of course, but we lost. I've been found guilty by due process of the law I trust. And in 11 more days, I'm going to die in the electric chair. Up until we lost the appeal 3 days ago, I hadn't given up hope. Now I know that nothing can save me. I also know that I didn't kill Brian. And somehow, somewhere, the man or woman who changed those blank cartridges for real bullets, somehow he or she will pay. I have no emotion left. I can't cry or pray or do anything but wait. 11 more days of waiting.
Watch you in his office, Jackson. Come on.
What's the use? We've been over it so many times, it doesn't make sense anymore.
Come on. Let's get going. If the warden wants you, he wants you. Here's a prisoner, warden.
Come in, Jackson.
What do you want now?
Come in, son. Sit down. Son, a few moments ago, I received a visit from a notary public, a Mr. Bixton. An amazing story. It seems that 3 days before your brother died, he went to Mr. Bixton and wrote out a statement which he made Mr. Bixton witness without reading.
A statement?
It was sealed in an envelope in Bixton's presence and kept in his safe. Your brother told Bixton you're going to be tried for a crime. But if you were convicted, Bixton was to bring this letter to me 3 days after his sentence was passed. He did as he was told. For which your brother paid him $50. Bixton's outside now, dictating his testimony. Well, this is the letter your brother wrote. Here, read it.
To whom it may concern. This is an open letter to my brother who will probably
need it. Dear Frank, I hope you'll forgive what I did to you. It was I, Brian Jackson, who replaced the blanks in your gun with real bullets. You didn't know it, but Dr. Cordner had given me just 3 months to live. Heart, he said, and incurable. I chose this way because I didn't want a lingering death. And because I wanted you to know that an innocent man can be convicted of murder and sentenced to death. This letter will bring you your freedom, but I hope you will admit now that murder is a matter of opinion. Yes, Frank, whether you like it or not,
murder is a matter of opinion. Your loving brother, Brian.
You have just heard Murder is a Matter of Opinion by Jules Archer, Attraction 39 on Radio City Playhouse. The story was adapted for radio by Harry W. Junkin, who also directed the production. Bill Lipton starred as Frank Jackson. Michael O'Day was Brian Jackson. Other players in the cast included Peter Hobbs, Sidney Smith, Scott Douglas, Elaine Rost, and Robert Andrus. The music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield.
This is Harry Junkin again. Our sincere thanks to Bill Lipton and Michael O'Day for their splendid performances tonight. Next week, we hope you'll be with us again at this same time for another story on Radio City Playhouse. Next week, Attraction 40 on Radio City Playhouse. Good night, everybody.
Bob Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.